We're set up.
I hear you.
Good. No, that's good. I was asking you if you're set up and everything else.
Come on, now I don't understand you.
Yes, we're set up. Yeah, sure, complete. Thanks for asking.
Good morning. This morning's session is on mathematical and numerical relativity, and our first speaker is Michalis Tafemos on the interior of dynamical black holes and quantum cosmic censorship conjecture.
Okay, so it's great to be here, and thanks for everyone who has said this. Very nice to meet you. Let me say what I want to say in this presentation. So I'd like to sort of introduce this problem of strong cosmic censorship, this conjecture of homologability, and in particular present a very recent result, which is not yet published, but has something definitive to say on this. So let me just say what I'll say. So the conjecture is most naturally viewed by comparing the Schwarzschild resolution. So I'll begin by reminding you of the difference between Schwarzschild and Kerr and how this naturally leads to this conjecture.
Could you speak up a bit?
Yes, much louder.
I think I naturally
will do so as I enthusiasm.
The enthusiasm.
Well, do it unnaturally then.
So this topic has been studied over the years in the context of various linearized settings and also non-linear toy models. So I'll very superficial about that, and then I will tell you about this recent understanding that we have. And finally, okay, I'll say what's left to be done on this problem. So let me begin by discussing this, introducing this conjecture in the context of where it most naturally arises, in comparing the Schwarzschild and Kerr solutions. So, okay, everybody knows this, but I'll say it nonetheless. So Schwarzschild for me is sort of the maximally extended Schwarzschild. This is Schwarzschild. We all know it's geodesically incomplete. And in particular, all observers gamma which enter the black hole region, they live for only finite time. So this is a Penrose diagram depiction. There's a gamma. Such a gamma lives for only finite time. But there's a, quote, good reason why gamma lives for only finite time. So all incomplete observers are, in fact, torn apart by infinite tidal forces as they approach r equals 0. So it's not just that the curvature blows up, but in fact they are torn apart by infinite tidal forces. And in some sense, a related statement to that, which is more easy to formalize, is that this spacetime cannot be extended to a larger spacetime, even in a very weak sense. That's to say, as a Lorentzian manifold with a continuous metric. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So not a C2 metric. C2 metric, sort of obvious that you cannot extend in view of the fact that we all know curvature goes up, but even in the stronger sense. Actually, this inextendability statement was sort of a folk theorem, which was recently proven by a student of mine, Jan Spiersten. But in any case, it's interesting. Moreover, you can visualize, quote, the singularity as a singular boundary of space-time r equals 0. And this singular boundary, you can think of it as a space-like hypersurface. So to summarize, Schwarzschild is geodesically incomplete. But it's geodesically incomplete because it's inextendable in a very strong sense. Okay. And moreover, the singularity is space, not Schwarzschild. Kerr. So what's the situation when we pass from Schwarzschild to Kerr? So if you look at the spacetime, which is uniquely determined by initial data, so for me, in some sense, this is my semantics, that's what I mean by the Kerr spacetime. So initial data is this two-ended hypersurface sigma, and the region uniquely determined, let's say, to the future by sigma is this darker shaded region. And given you a Penrose-like romantic picture. Okay. Now, this is again geodesically incomplete. So gamma here is an observer who, within the darker rated region, only lives for finite time. And again, all observers that enter the black hole region, they live for only finite time in the darker shaded region. But it is not geodesically incomplete because it is inextendable. In fact, you can extend this manifold to the larger one, this lighter shaded region, smoothly. And moreover, you can do so that every observer that was incomplete in the original spacetime passes to the extension. So we call the boundary of the original spacetime in the extended spacetime the Cauchy horizon. And it is a, if you want, it's a horizon of the Cauchy problem. Of course, we all know, you'd say, okay, since you can extend, why did the original spacetime, why did I only shade the region that I shaded? Well, to say it again, this is the region which is uniquely determined by initial gamma. And these extensions, in fact, they are smooth, you can make them solve the Einstein vacuum equations. These extensions are not unique. Okay, in fact, there are manifestly, there's an infinite dimensional family of vacuum solutions that is smooth. So these observers are not unique. And of course, this somehow opens the question, so what happens to these observers? Which, do they pass to an extension? If so, which one? Okay, and thus, what happens to this? So this brings us to the issue at hand, if you will. Which of these two situations is better? This one, manifested in Schwarzschild, or this one? And certainly if you're the observer gamma, probably you'll prefer this one, because in this case you're going to be torn apart by infinite tidal forces. That doesn't sound so pleasant. But this, in this case, you live another day in this extension, okay? You don't know what's going to happen to you, but life is like that anyway.
You better be a very small observer in that case, though, as well. Or a very big black hole.
But from the point of view of bureaucracy, this situation is far better, because all observers are accounted for. But that's to say, you either wisely avoid the black hole and you live forever, or you enter the black hole and you're torn apart. So you don't have any, somehow, observers like this gamma that we cannot account for. And in some sense, the philosophy of it is that, theory should be more like bureaucracy, and it should want to account for everyone. And this, if you want, is a cartoon of the motivation for strong cosmic censorship conjecture, which, before I read out this formulation, basically the gist of the conjecture is that Kerr is a fluke, and sort of the solution that arises from generic initial conditions does not exhibit this property of Kerr. If it is geodesically incomplete, it should be singular in the sense that all incomplete geodesics are destroyed. And a way of saying that that statement cleanly is the following. So, of course, you can make this conjecture in great generality in general relativity when coupled with multiple fields, etc., which are appropriate, but let me restrict this whole discussion to vacuum, because this is a conceptual issue. So, the cleanness of the vacuum. So, for generic vacuum asymptotically flat initial data, then the statement is that the maximum Cauchy development should be inextendable as a suitably regular Lorentzian model. Let's not worry about how you define the notion of generic initial data. In fact, there is a sense that is the least problematic of the two things which are not defined here. The other notion that I sort of haven't defined explicitly is what suitably regular should mean. And in some sense, this talk, hopefully I will convince you that this is, you'll see. Okay. So so this is the conjecture. So in particular, this statement is true. This predicate is true of Schwarzschild. It is not true of Kerr. So if this conjecture is to be true, Kerr in some sense has to be unstable. The Kerr behavior has to be unstable. So this is okay. All right. I should say that, of course, back in around 1972, let me make two comments just about the terminology. So, originally, these conjectures were not explicitly stated in terms of the initial value problem, but there is no other way to formulate it. So this has come to be understood as the correct way to formulate these conjectures. Let me also say that the name Strongbow's extension is a bit unfortunate, but it is historic. So Bob Wall talked the other day about cosmic censorship. By that he meant what's often known as weak cosmic censorship. Weak cosmic censorship is just the statement that generically in gravitational collapse you have black holes and not naked singularities. That statement is not logically related to this. This is not a stronger conjecture. The reason it's called strong is simply that both Schwarzschild and Kerr, if you want to, you know, have, do not violate weak cosmic censorship. They have they have black holes in that sense. But Kerr distinguishes between the two. But in reality, this is in some sense an unfortunate name. A better name would be the global uniqueness conjecture, perhaps. But in any case, I will stick to this name because it's traditional, even though it
will give us some problems later.
Okay. So so that, if you want, I just gave you a sort of a philosophical reason for maybe wanting this to be true. But Penrose did not conjecture it on the basis of wishful thinking merely, because there is a possible mechanism for instability, which he identified. And this is the celebrated blue shift effect. And many of you know this. This is dual to the more familiar redshift effect associated to the event horizon. So you have two observers, A and B. A does not enter the black hole. So A's proper time is infinite. B is the more kamikaze style observer, enters the black hole, and heads for the Cauchy horizon. So the proper time of B is finite. So if you think about it, if A sends a signal at a constant frequency, to B, the frequency at which the signal is received by B is shifted to the blue as B's proper time approaches the time of crossing the Cauchy horizon infinite. So you might think that, okay, this is if you have sort of waves propagating on this, what I just described is a sort of geometric optics type argument that in the high frequency sort of limit there is some instability. And after all, the Einstein equations themselves, as we've learned from work in the 1930s, is a system of nonlinear wave equations. So sort of that suggests that once there is a dynamic degree of freedom in the full nonlinear dynamics of the Einstein Platon equations, then this should trigger some sort of instability. This was the sort of very vaguely the heuristics of Penrose that sort of justified, if you want, making this conjecture. Of course, it's a huge extrapolation. This is just, you know, the special case of what's going on near Kerr, but at least it suggested that perhaps this phenomenon of Cauchy horizon. Fine. So now let me make a little comment. If you think about sort of linear wave equations on a fixed background, then if the background is globally hyperbolic like this region, then you can never have blow up in the background. The worst thing that can happen is that asymptotically you have blow up. So that means that as a matter of principle, if you sort of look at linear analysis, the worst thing that can happen is that your linear fields blow up on this Cauchy horizon. But sort of Penrose took one step further and said that, well, okay, if I think that there's a linear instability acting, and so linear fields are getting bigger and bigger, at a certain point nonlinear effects will kick in, and they will induce a breakdown before I have time to even form something that looks like a Cauchy horizon in the sense of causality. So in particular, the working hypothesis that people had was that the generic dynamic solutions of the Einstein equation, the causal picture would revert to Schwarzschild. So in particular, again, you would have a space-like singularity, which presumably sort of would be singular, moreover, in exactly the same way that Schwarzschild is. And this meshed well with sort of another genre of discussion of singularity due to Belinsky, Kalatnikov, and Lipschitz, who sort of, in some sense, thought, assumed it's not clear that singularities should be space-like, and then moreover derived a sort of complicated heuristic as to how they should look like and found chaotic behavior, sort of independent chaotic behavior at each sort of point of the space-like part.
I assume you mean Lipschitz.
Yes. Yeah, I do. Sorry. It's as a mathematician, I immediately went to Yeah, Lipschitz would never have said so. So, and in particular, explicitly, these authors, in this context, they said that this would happen. Okay. So, in view of this, one sort of the commonly understood formulation of strong cosmic censorship, which I'm forced to call very strong cosmic censorship, because strong cosmic censorship is already strong, is this sort of strong formulation, which says that for generic vacuum, it's a totally flat initial delta, then the maximal Cauchy development should be inextendable, just like Schwarzschild's. So as a Lorentzian manifold of continuous matter. And you really should think that this means that observers who live for a finite time are torn apart. Moreover, the singularity, this latter part is harder to formalize, but let me throw it in, can be naturally thought of as space. Okay. So this is, if you want, very simple. All right, so this is the, if you want, the sort of background introduction. Let me see how awful I am this time. Very. So let me give a very revisionist discussion of sort of how you can actually sort of try to understand this in the context of linear theory and in the context of toy models, which are non-linear but restricted. Okay. So, and this is a revisionist historical discussion also because it is completely achronology, not chronologically correct, because some of the things, which in some sense are the simplest, they were done very recently. But in any case, you see that already here. So, so first of all, there was something indeed completely correct about what Penrose heuristically was saying all along. That's to say, this optics sort of blue shift instability argument can be translated into the following type of statement, that indeed, if you let me draw it, I'll inaugurate the use of this, I hope you can see. So this statement, embarrassingly, is only proven for the rise of Nord Stream case, but then. So if you start with compactly supported initial data for the for a scalar field, so think of a scalar field compactly supported somewhere here initially, okay? Then the statement is for generic such data, indeed the local energy of the solution here will be infinite. So that's the statement. So there was actually some very nice work, old work of McNamara, was I guess a student of Penrose back in 1978, but couldn't quite show this, and nothing was done in this general until this very recent result. I'll tell you more about Jonathan Luke, who's one of the authors later. All right, so that's in some sense. In that world, that's good news. But there's also another piece in that world, which in some sense, I think, had this been understood earlier and digested, then things would have been very different. Which is the following, and this is a statement not for Reiser Nordstrom, but more generally in the Kerr case, that in the same setup, that's to say, if we look at, this is Kerr now, and this is compactly supported data for the wave equation, the solution of the wave equation will be bounded all the way up to the Cauchy horizon, and in fact, it will extend it. So the solution itself, phi itself, is bounded.
It's not continuous, though.
It's continuous up to here. But the energy is something like, you know, I take derivative of phi in local coordinates squared, I integrate here. That's it. Okay? So that's what's happening. So even though there is an instability, the instability is not enough to destroy phi itself. So this is actually a recent statement proven by a student of mine, Anne Franz. Okay. So where does this leave us? So if one naively extrapolates this linear theory to the full nonlinear setting, so you identify C, a scalar field, with the metric itself, the metric should have two indices, and if you sort of identify derivatives of C with Christoffel symbols, this suggests that maybe actually sort of this Cauchy horizon is preserved, and the metric itself sort of extends continuously to such a hypersurface evolution. But the Christoffel symbols in any regular coordinate system should blow up. In fact, should blow up in the sense that they fail to be squared. So if you believe this, then that would suggest that sort of generically this Cauchy horizon should become a sort of a boundary which is singular, but null, and singular weakly. Okay. So you can continuously extend the metric beyond, but the Christoffel symbols fail to be squared. So in particular, the curvature blows up, but something worse than curvature blow up. Christoffel symbols are not square integral in any coordinate system. But metric is fine. So observers are not destroyed. They just feel pain. So there's a long study of this in fully nonlinear, spherically symmetric toy models. So this actually began with Hiscock and Israel Poisson. There were lots of numeric works. This was, let's say, in the 90s. Lots of things happened, and a long time ago, I proved that, yes, in the context of fully nonlinear spherically symmetric toy models, so the Einstein equations with the scalar field, and you also have charge, so you have Reiser Nordström, because this is correct in the toy world. On the other hand, if you believe this is original intuition, then you can say, okay, those are toys. And on very general consideration, I think that the generic vacuum solutions will not happen. You should have sort of space-like singularities, and the picture should be as in very strong contrast. So the question is, okay, which of these two is true? So let me tell you which of these two is true. Very quickly, if you think that it may be the first, that's to say, if you think that actually you generic dynamic vacuum black holes without any symmetry can have these null boundaries which are weakly singular, you first have to demonstrate that you have such, in principle, you can construct spacetimes which are vacuum and have those type of boundaries, just a local little patch of such spacetimes. And this was unknown. In fact, many people claimed that you couldn't. But Jonathan Luke, who's a talented young lecturer in Cambridge, came along, and he constructed these. And he constructed these in some sense in the obvious way you'd set up to do it. That's to say, you sort of you create them by solving an initial value problem, where your initial delta is characteristic. So you have, these are two null cones. Of course, I have to draw everything as if it were 1 plus 1 dimension, but it's not. This is full 3 plus 1 dimension. And you put initial data here. So initial data in general relativity on characteristic hypersurfaces is governed by the shear. The shear is sort of like free data. Okay. So you put in a shear. We denote the shear traditionally by this key bar, but anyway. So this is the tracery part of the second fundamental form of this cone, but it's actually intrinsic. And you make the shear singular here as you approach sort of this sphere, but singular in a way that's integrable. And this is, if you think about it, this is something singular. This is going to be u bar equals zero. Okay, but it is integrable. So this is consistent with, this is at the level of a Christoffel symbol. Christoffel symbols blow up. In fact, if you square that, it's not integrable. But if you don't square it, it is integrable. And you sort of get something of the order of the metric. So you would think I put in this thing here and anything there, and I evolve the Einstein equations, you might think, oh, I'll get a singularity that comes in like this. But no, what he showed is that you can evolve and you get a region of spacetime, which is foliated by a double null foliation. And this boundary there is then your weak null singularity. Let's say this sort of singular behavior propagates. So that's what he showed. And actually, he showed something more. Namely, you can even, you know, I didn't say anything about what I put here. So now I can put something with a singular profile as I go here and as I go there. And if I make things small enough, I construct a region of spacetime which is bounded by a bifurcate weak null singularity. So he showed these remarkable results. I don't, of course, have any time to indicate how these results are cool. Okay. In any case, that's all great. That says that weak null singularities, you know, you can construct patches of vacuum spacetime for which they exist, but they don't say that these form dynamically in black hole interiors. But nonetheless, it turns out that putting together these techniques with the sort of results on the linearized theory that I talked about, and also a little bit of the intuition from this nonlinear strictly symmetric model problem, we've proven the following statement. So I have to start the statement on the event horizon, and I'll go back to this issue. So let me assume what everyone believes, that's to say that the Kerr solution is stable in its exterior. So what that means, if this is Kerr initial data and I perturb, then I come up with a spacetime whose Penrose diagram will have a region, okay, that looks like this. This is the exterior. And near here and near here, okay, I am asymptoting to another member of the Kerr family. So everyone believes this, and moreover, one asymptotes to another member of the Kerr family at an inverse polynomial rate. So in particular, we have what I'll call these two event horizons. Okay, these are affine complete, and the solution is approaching the sort of event horizon of a Kerr and the event horizon of another Kerr. These will be different in general, but nearby. Okay. So I'm going to study initial value problem with this data. And the statement is that the evolution of this looks like that. Okay. And moreover, you can extend the solution to a larger continuous metric. Okay. So that's the statement. So let me make manifest. So in particular, so this is a general statement about this type of data. So if you believe that Kerr is stable in its exterior, and there's absolutely no one who does not believe that, we'll go back to that in a second, then this tells you that the Penrose diagram of Kerr is stable.
So in your case, the shear is square integrable, or?
So I'm making no... So remember that in the linearized theory, there are sort of blow-up results and stability results. This is just an analog of the stability results. So the proof, of course, suggests, and in fact, it has to, because this is going to be true, finally, a conjecture, that generically, this boundary will be singular in the sense described. So I'll get back. Okay. But this is just a statement. So in particular, if you believe in the stability of the Kerr exterior region, then very strong cosmic substitute is false. So that is the state. So, okay, I say very quickly what's left to be done. Finish. So first thing is, of course, to prove this statement, right? That indeed, if I start with perturbation of Kerr initial data, then the exterior is indeed stable in the sense that I said. So this, as I noted, then you know, this whole issue would be fit. Let me not say. I mean, I could have said. I think this problem, open problem one, will be solved in the next 5 years. Okay. But let me not say why, because there's not so much time. Say more. So open problem two is related to what Abai was saying. This is just an analog of the negative state. Okay, that's to say, or however you want to think of it, of the stability. So part two of the theorem should be that for generic perturbations of Kerr. By the way, if you don't impose genericity, this is the best you can do. It will not be the case that all perturbations of Kerr are. So for generic perturbations, you would like to prove that you have this boundary is singular in the sense that in any coordinate system in which the metric is continuous, the Christoffel symbols fail to be square integral. I believe this will also be proven, say, in that this is also a provable result by the techniques of quantum analysis. This will say that spacetime isn't extendable in the class of spacetimes with such that the Christoffel symbols are locally square integral. And actually, this is the weakest class in which it makes sense to talk about weak solutions of Cauchy. So in some sense, it is well motivated to say, okay, strong cosmic censorship means inextendability in this class, because, okay, even though I can extend this as a metric, there is no way that I can interpret my extension as a solution of the Einstein equations, even weak. But of course, observers are not really destroyed, so there is still... It is still problematic. So this formulation of strong cosmic censorship in terms of L2 Christoffel symbols, this is due to Christoffel. So a corollary of this would be that strong cosmic censorship in this sense is true in a neighborhood of the curve. I'll skip this and just end with some final remarks. So in particular, I added another aspect, right, to very strong cosmic censorship, the statement that singularities are generically spaced. This is also falsified, of course. You see that this is the singularity, it is not. Okay. So that is false now, sort of modulo a future proof of the stability of the current state. But you might wonder, okay, what happens in the case of collapse? So if I have collapse, because after all, astrophysical black holes are not small perturbations of two-ended curve, sort of, you know, I have something that collapses, so I have something that looks like this, right? So what happens in collapse? So the theorem actually applies to this region here. So any black hole such that the final angular momentum parameter is not zero will have a piece of null boundary. This is a corollary of this theorem. Okay. But you could wonder, what happens? Is there a space-like or something here, or does this sort of close off the space? I think this is the question that one has to ask now. This is the correct sort of next thing to understand if we want to understand singularities beyond this. So as a final comment, let me just say that sort of, the legacy of the literature on generic singularities was very, very negative for understanding this issue, because it put at center stage a scenario which now is falsified in all generality, but if it is true in some regime, that regime is very difficult to understand. The reason that this type of singularity could be understood is because it's actually simpler. So it's important to always start with the simplest. Okay, that's the talk. Thanks.
As usual, we'll defer questions to the discussion period. Next is Lewis Lehner of the Grimmer Institute, unraveling the GR and strongly gravitating regimes through simulations.